Linda, thanks very much for joining us today.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, one of the things we were talking about just a few minutes ago is how the guitar, which you spend so much time with, is found in so many different cultures around the world. It really is a quote-unquote world music instrument and has been so for hundreds of years.
Yeah, yeah. It seems like there's some sort of stringed instrument in each country, that some variation of a guitar or something the guitar has been derived from, like the oud, or in one stringed instruments or two stringed instruments. There's something rhythmic or stringed in most countries, it seems.
Did you yourself start playing the guitar at a young age? Is that kind of how you got into this?
Yeah, I was a kind of a bad folk singer. Luckily, I changed careers. Luckily for the world and my parents, actually.
Did you sing around town a little bit?
I did, actually. I actually opened for, or he opened for me, for Tom Cochran when we were both teenagers growing up in Etobicoke. I'm not sure. He obviously made the right choice to stay in it.
So what drew you to saying, I'd really like to try building one of these things?
I was actually in an art college, and I was doing a few things. I was painting, I was making musical instruments part-time, like dulcimers, in a woodworking shop, and I was kind of trying to figure out what to do with my life, and I decided to focus, and it was of all the things I was doing, kind of mediocrely. Is that a word, mediocrely?
Well, it is now.
It is? Okay, good. It's the thing that actually kind of resonated the most with me. Good word, too. So I applied to Jean-Claude Larivé to study with him, and he actually accepted me. I actually bothered him until he hired me. And what happened was, I walked into his shop for the interview to work with him, and as soon as I walked in, I knew that's what I was supposed to be doing.
Wow.
It was just one of those things where all the bells went off and I just felt right at home with it. So it was very clearly my calling.
What was your experience like of actually making your first guitar with him?
It was amazing. When you first put strings on something you get sort of lost in the process, because it really does take quite a long time to do it. In this case, it probably took me months. But by the time you get to the point where you're actually putting strings on it, you suddenly realize all the work you've done is now, it's sort of being born right at that second, and it comes alive, and it's really thrilling, unbelievably thrilling.
Wow.
Yeah.
Do you know where that first guitar is?
I wish I did. I know it's supposed to be in this house, but I haven't seen it for a while. So, yeah, I kept it, though, in theory.
Oh, really nice.
Yeah, I just have no idea where it is.
So, that was your first guitar. How many guitars would you say you've actually made throughout your years of making instruments?
I haven't actually kept track. I mean, I have kept track, but I haven't counted, so I'm going to guess around 400. Mm-hmm. And I could be off by 100 easily. I just sort of don't keep track of it. They've accumulated. I make about 20 a year, and I've been doing it for 30 years.
Is there
so that's 600.
Yeah, right. I'm glad you're a good mathematician.
Yeah.
So is there a thread that runs throughout a lot of your guitars, like something that's really important to you, almost like a theme, a musical theme, per se?
That's a really good question, because it's said that most guitar makers have kind of an envelope of sound that's very distinctively theirs. So you can get a lot of people can pick up my guitar and just know it's my guitar if they're blindfolded, from maybe the feel, maybe the sound, just because I have a particular style. What I go for is a very dark, clean sound. So it's kind of more like a piano. It's not. Mm. It does open up, and it can be powerful, but at the beginning, it's actually a little bit of a closed, clean, pure sound that I go for, which I think develops really nicely over time.
How do you achieve that sound?
That's a complex question, but primarily from the use of the types of wood I use, how I use them, and what type of strutting I do inside the guitar, the actual shape of the guitar, the body size, the shape of it. There's so many factors. It's, part of it's intuition, part of it's guesswork, part of it's science.
Hmm. I remember looking at your website and seeing the so-called 25th anniversary edition guitars. Am I correct about that?
Yes, yeah.
Okay. And what really struck me quite strongly about it is I could really feel the connection of the guitars to their source, where they came from, like the earth and the various types of the wood and the trees and everything. And with the designs, like some of them have a bear carved into it, I believe.
Yeah, this particular one, I decided to use some woods that I had that have a feature called the bear claw, which is the top looks like a bear has been clawing at it. So it's got these kind of squiggles in it. And I used that bear claw as the theme. And I was looking for pictures of bears in the Toronto Library, and I found these pictures of the spirit bear, which I didn't know about, which is the white bear that's not albino, not a polar bear, but an actual white brown bear in the West Coast. I forget the name of the islands, but it intrigued me, and I decided to theme the guitar on that. And so everything was about bears. So there's a carving of the bear, his claws reaching around and grabbing some berries on the heel of the neck of the guitar. There's an inlay of two spirit bears, or of a brown bear and a spirit bear catching fish on the inlay in the peg head. There's some engraving on the tailpiece.
Hmm.
And it was a very special guitar for me. I just made the one.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
it's so beautiful to look at, and I think that at this point it would be a good thing to mention to the listeners that perhaps as they're listening to this interview they can also check out your guitars at your website, which is
www.manzer.com.
And it's a great website.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, <it is. laughs> I'll tell my webmaster.
How has your craft then changed over the years? Have the tools of the trade for you changed, or the way you approach it changed?
The main thing that has changed, it was when I started, there was very few guitar makers, and it was really hard to learn. You had to do a traditional apprenticeship, where I studied with Jean-Claude Lhervé and learned the ropes through him. It took about 3.5 years, and there was a few of us that went through it that way. And now there are literally hundreds of guitar makers, which is a bit mind-boggling. And there's also videos and books and places you can go to learn, things that just weren't available. I mean, the internet didn't exist when I started out. So you had to write a handwritten letter to somebody and hope for a response. There was no books except for one. And if you wanted to learn, you had to be taught by a master. And in my case, I was incredibly lucky to study with two masters, Jean-Claude Lhervé and Jimmy DeQuisto, who taught me how to build archtop guitars in Long Island.
Would you say that something gets lost then if you don't learn from a master, if you're getting it off of the internet or out of a video or something?
I would say it might take a little longer to learn. I think what you're talking about, the organic process, working with other people, there's a million mistakes you can make, and it's really good to have other people make those mistakes with you and find ways to solve problems together. It's also more fun. I mean, it's a lot of fun to build guitars. It's hard for me to say. I know a lot of builders nowadays use a lot of machines, like CNC machines to make parts, which, to be honest, I sort of think that's cheating a little bit. But because you can almost just kind of like a Heathkit guitar, kind of put it together. A Heathkit might be a word some people don't understand. Those were kits that people used to make science projects out of, and you didn't really have to know what you're doing. You could just snap everything together. So I suppose there is something to do with, you know, just time is the most important teacher, really, when you're building musical instruments.
How about areas where you've made real innovations with the guitar, like your Picasso guitar, for instance? You didn't have any prototype, I imagine, to work from. So what happens then when you're inventing, so to speak?
Well, that was an incredible journey, musical journey for me. That came from Pat Metheny asking me for a guitar with as many strings as possible. That was in 1984. I started building that. And one of the problems with it, because it had so many strings on it, had 1, 2, 3 necks and then a sort of a fourth neck off at the side. So there's 42 strings crisscrossing on the top of the guitar. And one of the things that I did was I had 2 sound holes, 4 necks, and a couple of doors so you could access the inside. But the main thing that ended up being a really large innovation was sort of an accidental innovation at the time was, in order to see the top of the guitar, I leaned the guitar top back a bit, squeezing the side right under your arm. What meant that you could look down on the top and not get confused. because it was like a traffic sort of intersection, and that ended up being the wedged body ended up being a really important innovation that I now do in all my guitars, and it was actually, I was talking with Tony Duggan-Smith, who's my assistant, and he and I were discussing various ways of being able to look at the top, and together we came up with this innovation, and now a lot of people are doing it on their guitars, and I think in a few years, maybe in 10 or 15 years, I bet half the guitars on the planet will be using it, because it's very, very comfortable. It's a really cool... Am I saying my idea is cool? Yeah, I guess I am. It's a great idea.
It is cool.
It's really a good... And you can't tell from the front of the guitar. Unless you turn the guitar sideways, you can't see it's wedged. So, I'm proud of it.
Well, you did mention Pat Metheny, and, most listeners are probably familiar with him, and if you aren't, the great American guitar player. He asked you to build a guitar with as many strings as possible. Is that what the request was?
Yeah, it was.
So what happens if you put a 43rd string on it? Does the whole thing go kaboom?
I sure hope not. There's no room for a 43rd one. It's under a lot of stress. I figure about 1,000 pounds of stress. Yeah. But it makes it real lively sounding.
Can you tell us the story of how you actually met him?
Actually, I met him in Toronto at Convocation Hall in 1982. I had been a fan of his for quite a few years prior to that, and I wanted to meet him, and it was my dream to make him a guitar, but I really didn't expect to meet him or, get an order from him. And after the concert, I went backstage, and it was actually his drummer, and I had an assistant who... from Denmark, Peter, and Peter and the drummer said, well, this is crazy, why don't we go try some guitars? So we grabbed some guitars, went back to the hotel, and stayed up till 3 o'clock in the morning, and he ordered a guitar. And that was the beginning of I think we're up to about 20 guitars now, and about half of them are things that he has come up with some idea that I've had to invent and design an instrument around a sound that he's looking for.
What are some of the guitars you've built for him?
A sitar guitar, a Picasso guitar, a fretless classical archtop guitar, a series of miniature guitars, one was a tipple, one was, which is a, I think it's a 10 string or 12 string, miniature guitar, I sort of lost track, classical steel string, 12 string, several archtops, nylon strings, miniature archtop guitars, miniature classical guitars, 7 strings.
It's a lot of guitars.
Yeah, and I'm working on one right now that has a lot of strings on it too.
Okay. What's really neat about some of those sounds of those guitars that you're talking about, I have a copy of his songbook, which is very frayed at this point, and he describes how some of the songs were written, and he goes, these are directly related, like Map of the World or One Quiet Night, like directly related to, the guitar that Linda Manser built for me. Mm-hmm. So those instruments are helping to generate all kinds of amazing musical ideas too.
Yeah, I think he looks at it as sort of like having a different palette, different colors for... Because he says he plays differently depending on the instrument. He picks it up and it just makes him feel a certain way musically, so it inspires a certain kind of song. And sometimes, for instance, Map of the World is a good example. He had that guitar for years until one day he told me that to listen for this new song.
Okay.
And it had just been recorded, and he was really excited about it. Mm-hmm. And that's built on a really tiny, that's one of the miniature guitars. That is about two-thirds of the scale of a regular guitar, if not less, actually. About two-thirds. It's a very pretty song.
Can you tell us about the sitar guitar that you built?
That actually, I had some fun researching sitars, actually. And finding out how the buzz comes about. And there's a whole thing about how the bridges of sitar guitars are designed and curved. And there's also a thing, and I can't remember the name of it, but there's an Indian word for the buzz. And it's sort of like the spirit of the buzz is in the guitar. And what I love about it is it says that if the buzz isn't working right on the sitar, it's actually the player who isn't really kind of meeting the string and the instrument halfway. So I like the fact they blame not me, but the player for once. So if you're not getting a buzz off this guitar, it's your fault.
You built some fretless guitars for him as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. Can you tell us about that instrument?
That one in particular was, he asked me for a guitar that sent, this is an example of what he asked me for, and it's so minimal, but he said, can you make me a guitar that has the kind of, that kind of growly sound of Charlie Hayden's bass, or Jaco Pastorius's bass? And that was all he asked for. So I went away, came back with this guitar that was fretless, with nylon strings, with an arch top, so it would have a kind of a reverb-y thing that would sustain the note longer. That was my intention. Of course, immediately after he got it, which was about maybe a year later, he plugged it into a fuzz tone thing and and cranked it up really loud, and it was just completely something other than what I thought it was going to sound like. I just never know what he's going to do with what I hand him, which is what the fun is. You have to, I have to kind of pat-proof the guitars so they're ready for anything.
And then it must be a whole other trip traveling with these things, too. So.
Well, he's got a nice tribe of people that travel with him who are just really wonderful people who look after all that stuff.
Is there anything you want to do, Linda, in terms of, building guitars that you haven't done yet?
Yeah, probably. I always have ideas. What I don't have is time, because I have a lot of people right now waiting for guitars that I promised them. I have actually closed my waiting list for now, and at the end of this year, I don't have any orders. I have a lot of people waiting for me to open my waiting list, but what I'm going to try to do is build in some time for me to build some of my fantasy instruments, of which are guitar-like, but not exactly. And I want to do some traveling, actually, and explore some, instruments from other countries. Because I love stringed instruments. So anything that at least slightly resembles a guitar is kind of my basis for building. But I'm definitely into exploring even more than I have.
Speaking of instruments from around the world, you built a charango, which is a South American instrument, for Bruce Coburn?
Yes, I did.
Yeah. How did that come about?
He called me up and asked me if I could build him a charango, and I had no idea what a charango was, so I asked him if it was animal, vegetable, or mineral, and he sort of had to tell me what it was. He had a charango that was they were usually made out of armadillo shells. And he had one from Central America, and it was very unstable, so if he would walk on stage with it, it would go out of tune. So what he was looking for was something solid that wouldn't go out of tune. So I made him actually a solid body, kind of electric charango. So I built hollow chambers into it, but the idea was it was stable. So but I made it look like a charango from the front. Although, of course, with Bruce, it was blue. So he wanted some twist.
Linda, how about the materials that you're using for your guitars? What's involved in getting the woods you need for building the guitars and everything around that?
When I first started building, all these woods were readily available. They're suppliers of musical instrument wood. It's a particular type of cut of wood from a tree. But the main thing is, traditionally, guitar wood is from very, very old trees. Like, if you count the lines on a guitar top, if each line represents 1 year in the tree's life, so you can get a 350-year-old tree for just one guitar top. And what's happening now is, because there's so many people using woods all over the world, it's actually getting harder and harder to find these woods. They're becoming rarer and rarer, or they are being protected, as they should be. So what I try to do is find sustainably harvested wood, which means that something will be planted where this tree was taken down. Or you try to find something like windfall, or a tree that's just fallen over from old age, and harvest that. But there really is there's a huge change in the way the forest industry has been attacking the forests, and it's been quite unsettling. And I've been actually quite involved with the environmental groups, and particularly in Ontario, I was working with some of the environmental groups when the Lands for Life project was happening, when they were trying to hand over management of the forest to lumber companies, fact, I did a couple of interviews on CIUT about that at the time. And it's still, I'm still not so happy with how it's working, because trees need to be really old in order to be musical instruments. So I was told 20 years ago that the instrument making woods would be, we'd run out by right about now. Yeah, so I'm not sure what the future holds, but certainly sensible forest management is an absolute must for the continuation of instrument making as I know it, that's for sure.
Well, Linda, just before we go to some music featuring your guitars that you built, I'd like to just refer everyone to your website, which is www.manzer.com, if they'd like to check out some of your instruments and the background behind them. We hope you've enjoyed today's interview with Canadian luthier Linda Manzer. For more info on Linda and her guitars, please visit her website, www.manzer.com. For more info and tickets about Pat Metheny's concerts on November 26th at Massey Hall and November 28th at Kitchener's Center in the Square, please visit his website, www.patmetheny.com. That's M-E-T-H-E-N-Y.com. I'm Barry Livingston. Thanks for listening to Speaking of Music. Thank you.
not real, you're just a ghost. You're not real, you're just a ghost.